Coming soon to a city near you, Vinitaly Roadshow. Have you ever wondered how to attend Vinitaly for free? Are you a wine trade professional interested in a sponsored trip to Vinitaly International Academy or Vinitaly, the Wine and Spirits Exhibition? Coming soon to Princeton, New Jersey, Harlem, New York, and Chinatown in New York City, Cardiff in Wales, London in England, and Roost in Austria. We'll be giving away our new textbook, Italian Wine Unplugged 2.0. Find out more about these exciting events, and for details on how to attend, go to liveshop.vinitaly.com. Limited spots available. Sign up now. We'll see you soon.
Welcome to The Next Generation. I'm Victoria Chanchev. Join me as we chat with young Italian wine people shaking up the wine scene. We're going to geek out on a grape or grape fam, then hear about all the wild wine things our guests have been up to, from vineyard experiments to their favorite wine bars.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Next Generation podcast. Today, we are celebrating Sunday with Sangiovese, a little trip to Tuscany with our interviewee today, Mr. William Goldschmidt of Corsano e Paterno, and also his special little project, Clivo Altura, which we will get to shortly. Most importantly, though, we are going to talk about the grape that he loves oh so dearly, and one of the driving factors in his special project, Sangiovese, one of the most important grapes in the world, arguably. I mean, some say it's the most important grape in Italy. In fact, this book in front of me says it, the new Italian Wine Unplugged 2.0 in my hands, fresh off the press. We're going to read a little bit about Sangiovese from this book because there's a lot. Well, you can get the book, right? Right? Are you guys ready? So here's some facts about Sangiovese. So like I said, one of the most important, if not the most important Italian wine grape. It's produced in every single region in Italy except for the Aosta Valley, which is in the northwestern corner of Italy, and then the northeastern corner of Italy, Trentino Alto Adige. So those two regions, no Sangiovese. It's most prominent in Tuscany, La Marca, and Emilia-Romagna, and DNA studies regarding its parentage have discovered Trinto Porcino as a possibility, but there are various other scenarios that aren't really conclusive yet. Sangiovese being such a noble and ancient grape, itself as a parent has a relationship with tons of other Italian grapes, further bolstering its status as a grape of great importance and a long history in the country. So it has relationships with grapes in Sicily. It has multiple biotypes, so the most notable being Sangiovese Piccolo and Sangiovese Grosso. And there are many, many others that you can discover. Historically, Sangiovese has a written documentation that dates it only as far back as the 16th century. The name has potential references to San Cristove, blood of Jupiter, and Sangiovese, San Giovanni, or St. John, whose celebration day coincides with the summer solstice. So we got Sangiovese summer and Sunday, all the S's. That said, Sangiovese has a lot of synonyms, including Brunello Sangiovetto, Brugnolo Gentile, Morellino, and Vialuccio. And just to clarify, Brunello Sangiovetto, not Brunello Sangiovetto, separate. So what's it like in the glass? The tasting profiles for Sangiovese do vary based on where it's grown and how it's vinified. But generally, Sangiovese wines exhibit medium ruby appearance, and primary aromas are red cherry, followed by licorice, tomato leaf, and violet, or herbal aromas. And then more aged examples of Sangiovese can take on leather and tar characteristics. The wine can have medium-high tannin with powdery mouthfeel, high acidity, medium to full body. Sangiovese is a very fresh red wine. And of course, it falls under many DOCs and DOCGs, and many that you know, of course, one being Chianti Classico and Chianti DOCG. And we have Rosso di Montalcino, Rosso di Montepulciano, we have Brunello di Montalcino, Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, Morellino di Scanzano, and then those are all in Tuscany. And then moving on to the Marche, Conero, Rosso Piceno, Emilia Romagna, Romagna DOC. So, yeah, I think that's a good overview. We're going to move on to a very, very smooth, hopefully, interview with Mr. William Goldschmidt, and I'm going to have him pop on.
Ciao, William. Welcome to the Next Generation podcast. How are you?
Hello, hello. Thank you for inviting me.
How's it hanging? Where are you right now? Are you in Tuscany?
At the moment, I'm in Tuscany. Yeah, exactly. Like half an hour south from Florence. I'm in the office of the farm of my family at the moment. So it's 9 p.m. So I just put the kids to bed and jumped in the office and here we are.
So what have you been up to lately? Now it's January. It's, you know, the month everyone doesn't really like.
Yeah, actually I do like, because it's quite a chill moment. Not really for me at the moment, but in generally for the life cycle of the vines. I think it's a moment we are preparing for bottling. But it's pretty much we're pruning, and pruning is a type of work that it's definitely more relaxing, because it takes a couple of months. It's not something that you have to really rush, like bad cleaning, or, you know, just like in the high season during spring and summer where you have to really run after the vegetation. But actually now I'm in between two projects. I mean, I'm between here and the family farm that I came back in 2018. I finished my studies in 2013 up in Piedmont. I studied viticulture and enology. It takes like 3 years, and then it took 3 years for me. Then, you know, it's people takes 4 or 5 years, but if you do it straight away, it takes 3 years. And then after that, I traveled for 4 or 5 years working in several wineries around the world. So pretty much doing a couple of harvests a year, sometimes even 3. And now I'm back home, and I'm in between. I divide my time in between here, my family estate, and this new project that I started in 2019. That's quite a challenging project. 45 minutes from here. So here in where am I at the moment, the family farm, it's in San Casciano Val di Pesa. So we are right in the border of the Chianti Classico. And this new project, it's in the Chianti Classico. It's looking, the map of Tuscany is going further south towards Siena. And it's totally a different environment. When I came back here in 18, back in my farm, after 1 year, I realized that I wanted to find something, a side project that could, you know, just could put me in a more in a challenging position. So I was looking for some vineyard to rent at the beginning. And because buy some grapes, it's a bit more complicated here in Tuscany. You can find good grapes, you can find grapes, but it's difficult to find organic good grapes, good quality grapes. There's not a lot of tradition of grower that then sell the grapes in good quality and organic. It's not like it could be, you know, in Burgundy or in some place in the New World countries like Australia or South Africa. So it's a bit more complicated. So the best thing, if you want to have good grapes, it's rather to cultivate, to rent a vineyard, actually, so you deal with the vineyard and then you pick your own grapes. So I was looking for that, but then ended up that there was this occasion of this land 45 minutes from here, and it was quite of a crazy land. It is a crazy land, because it's here in where my family farm, it's we are around 300 meters above the sea levels, and there it's nearly 600, so it's definitely higher. And it's a whole like north face slope with pretty much 45 terraces. And with terraces, I mean, each terrace has all the drywall stone keeping up the terraces. And it's quite a traditional old school way of doing agriculture here in Tuscany. Then it got lost in the 80s and 90s because people really, I mean, they couldn't really handle the cost of maintaining this land. And they probably at that time, they didn't realize the higher quality that this land could give in terms of grapes and wine. So they were totally abandoned. And yeah, so it was quite a good occasion. And I just bravely jumped in this new project. And so now it's taking me quite a lot of time because it was completely abandoned. So it was 20 years abandoned. And yeah, it's taking a lot to just bring it back. Lots of cleaning, lots of building drywall stone. So that's what I'm actually doing in these weeks. It's constantly building drywall stones to try to bring back that kind of life that had this land. and it's quite of a tough work, but it's definitely a lot of satisfaction to see slowly this tribal stone coming back, and it's really challenging. There's no vines. I mean, I planted next year is going to be the first harvest, so I planted around 1.5 hectares at the moment. The first planting was in 20. So next year we'll have the first kind of small harvest. So that's going to be quite exciting. Because it's you know, when you don't really know, I didn't know that much that area before purchasing this land. So I think there's nothing better than understanding a land, growing grapes and transforming the grapes into wine. So you really try kind of to see what is the expression. So it's going to be quite exciting next year.
So does that make you more of the rebel in the family then? Because I noticed that, you have quite the lineage of not just wine producers, but producers in general. I think your website needs a family tree, by the way.
It is definitely really complicated. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not really the rebel. I mean, I think it's a big family. So at the moment, my dad used to make wine until 2005. Then my cousin, Arianna, the daughter of Wendel, the one that bought the farm in the 70s, she stepped over because also she studied enology, and you know, my father helped to build a new winery and then left his space to Arianna, and now she's making amazing wine. And I think, you know, when like wine, making wine is like it's like, you know, drawing a paint, and it has to be at the end one person that really follows and decide where he wants that wine to go. Even if we are a family and we all decide in a way the big decision, the blendings, and the, you know, just before bottling some changes, so some we all decide, but then day by day I think you need one person that really follows has that kind of role, you know. And so when I came back home, I had all this energy from all this past experience that I had, and I felt that I had to some way express it making wine as well for myself. And and yeah, so I think I ended up, that was the main reason. And I actually think that this new project is going to help a lot me to also bring new stuff as well back home, because it's really challenging. And when you're like in a family farm, we have around 20 employees here. So, you know, it's sometimes it's everything is going. It's my father did a lot in the past, you know, since the 70s to create with my mom, with my cousin, but to create something that it's really going, not by itself, but it's quite a solid solid farm. So I think I'm learning much more now in this new project that I have to buy all the machines, I have to deal with lots of stuff that probably, you know, I wouldn't deal here in the farm. So it's a new challenge. And yeah, it's a bit difficult at the moment to really find the balance between the two, but it's I think now it's important that this new project takes a lot of time for me, because it's you know, I'm planting new vineyards, so you really have to do care a lot more when small plants, and it's the beginning, and I don't have absolutely essential role here in my family farm. I'm important. I'm taking care more of the sales. That it's something that I'm doing more and more. So traveling to America and working with the importers. But it's not something that if I'm not here in the farm, you know, people don't know what to do. So that's for me, it's quite important at the moment, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do this new project. So we'll see. We'll see in the future how it goes. I mean,
that's super interesting.
But it's definitely really exciting.
And is that why your English is so good and that you have definitely not an Italian name. all the time you spend in America now.
But actually, my mom, she's half English.
Ah.
So, yeah, I actually have four nationalities. So what happened a lot here in Tuscany in the 70s, there used to be a lot of immigration of kind of brave people that came here in Tuscany to change their life or to invest as well. And that was the uncle of my father that came here in the 70s and actually bought the farm that I was in a slightly abandoned condition. I'm talking about my family farm. And so, yes, I mean, the situation here in Tuscany in the 70s was difficult to understand when I tell to people. I mean, I wasn't here, but when people told me about that, I was really back in time. We used to have this contadini here in the farms, or mezzadri. So there were people that only the three couples here in Corzano, and only one person could read and write. So they were really kind of with a high ignorance in terms of cultural, but amazing workers. And so the classic type of contract here in Tuscany was, it used to be this crop sharing contract. So there was the nobility, then there was the person in between the nobility and the contadini, the workers, that was dealing a bit in between, he was a bit the communication gap between the two. And then there were this contadini that were working here in the family, in the farm, and maintaining the land. And half of their salary, it was half of the crop. So, and this kind of contract kept going until the Second World War, but it was kind of stretched until the 60s, pretty much. Because, of course, the nobility, they were super happy to have to keep going this kind of contract, because it was for them, it was the perfect solution to keep maintain this land. But these workers started to kind of get a bit more rebel, and they wanted to move in the town, in the villages nearby, because all these workers, of course, they didn't have cars, but they had mules and to go around. And it sounds quite crazy because it was not even 50 years ago. So, and yeah, so what happened actually, it's that when the nobility realized that all these workers moved in the villages and didn't want to work anymore, they didn't know, this nobility people, they didn't know how to maintain this land. And if you leave this kind of environment for 4 or 5 years without really maintaining it, it just get really fast in a bad condition. So they started to sell this land for kind of cheap. I mean, cheap. At that time, it wasn't that cheap. But if you see it now, it was definitely a great deal. And so a lot of English people, Swiss people, a lot of people from outside, they saw this kind of, they had the vision, they saw this kind of occasion, and they came down. And that was the uncle of my father that came down already in the 60s, but then in the 70s, he bought the farm, and everything started from there. And so after that, my mom from England came to visit a friend that she was living here, and met my father. And so actually my father is half Swiss, half Dutch, and my mom, she's half English and half Italian. So it's quite of an interesting mix. But I mean, I grew up here, I was born here in Italy, and I grew up here in the farm, so it's, I definitely consider myself a bit Italian, then definitely a good mix.
Well, you're clearly bringing back the contadino in that sense with your new project, and
yeah,
which is so important, and it's something that's happening in Chianti Classico, more particularly slowly but surely. And another reason I was really excited to have you on the podcast today, because, you know, we all know what everyone thinks of Chianti and Chianti Classico, whereas there's pretty much like, you know, the knowledge of, let alone just the DOCG, and then what the history of it is to the average consumer is pretty minimal. I mean, you know, and I think having younger energy in the area is kind of slowly but surely turning things around.
Yeah, Yeah, no, it's definitely really rare for several reasons, but it's, the cost of land, the Chianti Classico is getting, it's getting more and more fashionable, so everywhere, so of course it's not as trendy as Montalcino, but it's because it has so much diversity and complexity, and people also getting more confident about winemaking and also vine growing. And so there's definitely more wines with personality. Here in the 90s, 80s, 90s here in Tuscany, it was quite controlled by a lot by consultants. So there were like several consultants that they were really powerful and they were really putting their style into several projects, into several wineries. And one of the reasons is because a lot of people, they didn't know how to make wine, so they completely trust these consultants that they really, you know, put their style. So we lost a bit of personality, and also the consortium of Chianti Classico now, I think it's going in the right direction. We had this new subdivision, it's called UGA, but a bit of weird name. It's like ubicazione geografica giunta. To make it clear, it's actually like it's a bit of a better subdivision of the Chianti Classico. So, for example, Vagliagli, where this new land that I bought, it's under the Castelnuovo Berardenga comune. But Vagliagli, it's definitely, for example, it's much more near to Radda and Castellina in terms of distances. And the soil is really different from a lot of Castelnuovo Berardenga area. So they actually did a new UGA that's called Vagliagli, that of course is still underneath Castelnuovo Berardenga, but it has its own identity. So that's I think that's the direction, the good direction that people, that the consortium is going through, and to educate us, the producer, and to educate as well the customers, to make it a bit more interesting, and talking a bit more of Sangiovese from different soils, because Chianti Classico soil, it's a really old soil. We're talking about between 15 to 30 million years ago, and it has so much complexity, so you can really drive 5-10 minutes, and you can see from the altitude, from the exposure, from the type of origin of soil, and it changes a lot. So it's really good that we're starting to make the differences. And yeah, going back with young producer, it's difficult in Tuscany because there's this success. There is a lot of wineries are really hungry. In terms of as soon there is some land or some new project, or they just englobe, they just buy and they get bigger and bigger. That's a bit of a classic everywhere thing. But so it's difficult for a young producer to just step out. I mean, and to start a new project like I'm doing. I mean, there's a lot of course situation with new generation in terms of sun, like you know, they keep going what the past generation did, and they keep working in the farm, and they keep just challenging themselves. But to start a new project from scratch, it's really difficult, and especially also for me that I have the support of my farm, the family farm. I'm gonna bring the grapes here in the winery. Here in the farm. So, I mean, I have lots of help. Even for me, it's in terms of cost, in terms of knowledge, it requires a lot of effort and a lot of knowledge. So it's, and it's difficult. So it's not really a happy thing, but it's like that. It's difficult.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local food, and taking in the scenery. Now back to the show.
I completely understand that. It's one of the most it's one of the most popular wine regions in Italy, if not the world, to an extent. Land. I mean, it's funny that you're saying you're like it's becoming fashionable, when I'm like I'm pretty sure it's very fashionable already. But I know what you mean in the sense of people turning their eyes from like away from Brunello and going to Chianti Classico because the quality is. This is the same, if not better, and it's at a different price point, obviously, and there's more. But to step away a little bit from the, DOCG talk, because we can talk up all that and Google it, and also wanted to say for any American listeners, the UGA, you'd probably read as UGA. It sounds less sexy in American English. That's what he's referring to. But again, we're not going to dive into that because you can Google it. Make people do their research because William's talking enough. So your project, Clivo Altura, first harvest is next fall, 2023. I can't even say those words out loud. It's crazy. 2023 is here. Let's learn a little bit more about you, William. The funny thing is, I'm happy that I'm interviewing you because I finally know which brother is the one that's on the wine side. Because I was confused before this. Now I know. Tell us more about you working with your family. You know, what's up? Like,
it's amazing. I mean, I have an incredibly open family that always supported me also traveling around. And they were never like kind of studying in Piedmont. I was studying with several son of producer and you know, probably because in Piedmont they're sometimes a bit more kind of close-minded. Probably I don't want to be offensive, but it's and so
you can be offensive.
I saw a lot of sons coming out from university and going directly working the family farm and you know once you get into that kind of cycle and you get definitely more essential, more you work there, you get more important, you get more responsibilities and. Definitely it's more difficult to step back, you know. And I think one of the most beautiful thing about the wine world, it's the all this beautiful world of the traveling winemakers club kind of community, that it's each winery like us, every harvest, every year, we need extra help. And if it's people that study it, knowledgeable people that has this passion from outside Germany, Australian, American, and we are happy to get them in the team, and that's amazing. So you have a lot of work opportunities around the world, and that's amazing because you really can travel around different cultures and learn about different culture through working with people from there. And also you work with other interns that has your same passion. So I think it's the best learning process, definitely much, much better than university. And so I was glad that my family just was clever enough to just understand this. And so I did this 4 or 5 years of constantly traveling and working different wineries. And so I was really glad that they understood that and they understood that and they supported me as well, you know. And so when I came back home, I had a lot of this crazy energy and to bring back and new tips, new interesting stuff, you know. Just then I worked a lot with Pinot Noir, so it was really just trying to do a lot of stuff with Sangiovese, but then. You have to get back and understand that you're in a different context, and you just have to, adapt slowly in what's going on here. But yeah, I mean, I have an amazing, I feel really at home, and my family, it's just super open. Always, we share a lot. And now also my twin brother, I have a twin brother, identical, that he also came back in 2018 here in the farm. And he followed more what my mom did, that it's creating this, making cheese pretty much. And because this farm, I haven't told you, but we produce wine mainly, but we are really definitely most famous for cheeses. We have around 600 sheep from Sardinia, but they arrived here in the 80s. I mean, at the beginning, they were, of course, like 20, and then slowly they got bigger and bigger. And so now we have around 600 sheep, and then we have a stable, we have a dairy. So we milk at the moment, we milk every morning and every evening around 400 sheep. And we transform all here in the farm. We have a little shop. So, and my brother stepped in this kind of, first of all, he was working the stable. Now he's doing stable and dairy. And so, and he's doing amazing. I mean, I think, so both coming back in the farm, it was great because we supported, you know, each other a lot. And it's important in this, you know, big family context, as it's, we're really strong in general, but sometimes, of course, there's a lot of, as well, emotions coming through, you know, that's never that easy sometimes to rationalize and to separate from work, family work. So it's can be sometimes a bit sketchy. And but yeah, that's, I mean, I think personally, when I came back, it was a bit more difficult between my father and my cousin to find a position. But I think now I'm just perfectly slowly getting more on the sales in the farm. And because it, of course, it's important to, especially in family, to have roles, specific roles, so you can, you know, you feel responsible of something, and then of course it's all connected. But still, if you have one role, it's important, I think, especially when you have, you know, lots of families, lots of workers, to feel a bit more happy of what you're doing and a bit more satisfaction, you know.
So you seem very happy with your life. That's good.
I am. I'm pretty much, I'm really tired because it's difficult to manage. In the meantime, I mean, in 19, when I purchased this new land, my first kid called Zeno was born. And then 1 year and a half later, Eva Rose, my second daughter, was born. So it's been this like kind of COVID between period. It was really, really challenging in terms of not for the COVID, that we actually really lucky here in the countryside, but in terms of, you know, all this stuff coming in my life all together. And I was used to be a bit more kind of wild, traveling around without a lot of thoughts. And then when I came back home, happily, I decided to just, you know, just put some roots with my partner, Julia, that she's also an enologist. So she will also join me happily in this new project when the kids are going to be a bit more settled down with schools and everything. So yeah, no, it's a good. I'm building some good, solid stuff for the future. So I'm definitely really happy. Tired, but happy.
I mean, that's the motto, is tired but happy. At least you're January. I think that it's just so incredible that, first of all, you guys, you have the wine, you have the cheese, you have also an agriturismo. So for anyone that knows, you can come and visit them at, well, not at your project yet, of course. Well, maybe you'll get a special tour. I can't promise anything. That's up to Williams. But at Corzano and at Paterno, you can go visit. But it really, I mean, you shared so much. I'm so grateful to learn so much from you and to talk about your projects. And also, you have, I didn't even know you have two kids. It's so special.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. No, it's a pleasure. I mean, it's good that you're doing this amazing thing. I mean, also it's nice to hear the young generation speaking about wine and how they actually fit inside their families, because it's not always easy for sure. I mean, here it's going really well, but I know a lot of friends that they, you know, just struggling as well, because I mean, if you see on paper, they have everything, you know. A lot of colleagues from university didn't have this opportunity. They were like, you're so lucky. But, you know, some people, they didn't really want to do that, but they feel forced. A lot of people, they probably, you know, they just want to do it, but they don't feel comfortable, and because a lot of pressure, you know. And so it's quite an interesting, this transition between the generation. It's quite an interesting topic. I think it's a great topic.
Absolutely. And like we touched on throughout the interview, it's, you know, there's certain, everyone enters the industry in from different avenues and in different places. And the traveling winemaker thing, I'm learning myself through this next generation series. It's very much a trend. It's a really awesome one. Inspiring. I think one person I interviewed recently has like hashtag traveling winemaker as their thing. So if that blows up, we know why. But unfortunately, we have to wrap up because we are on time limits, because, you know,
perfect.
I can talk for days if I want myself. But again, thank you so, so, so much, William.
It was big pleasure. Big pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jeff, for inviting. It was a big pleasure. And, you know, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And best of luck with all your pruning and your children and everything.
Thank you very much. Ciao, Victoria.
Ciao.
As always, a big grazie for hanging out with me today. Remember, you can catch me every Sunday on the Italian Wine Podcast, available anywhere you can get your pods.